Podcast, and I'm your host, Rillian. Welcome back, episode 41, part 8 to the Prince Caspian Analysis. We are here today with Gents, Jimfan, and Glumpuddle, and we're going to go ahead and get started and wrap up the battle here.
Wow, that was like was that 40 minutes for just like, just
that was
basically
really long.
That was about 40 minutes, yeah. Leave it to us.
Yeah, that was a lot of talk on the single combat. We probably should have gone through that faster.
Oh, well. People love these. We're getting great feedback on these, so. Except that some people, John, didn't like how we didn't talk about Edmund that much, but...
What did I just talk
Edmund
about?
Special after we finished going through the script. That's what we could do, actually. We could do a character special.
We could. Although we've discussed so much about character already. We'll see.
Go back to Line Witch and Wardrobe.
I think that...
Let's talk about the battle.
We gotta do an audio commentary a fan commentary on the film when it comes out.
Oh, we'll have to.
Wardrobe yesterday, actually. It's like the first time I've watched it in a year.
Oh.
Wow.
I got completely burned out on that movie quite a long time ago when I was screen capping it and I did frame by frame. I went the whole movie frame by frame. It's killer. I will not ever do that again. Not for anything. But that's like the first time I've really sat down and watched it in a very, very, very long time.
Flames are going too fast.
Okay, the battle. I actually think that the way it worked with the ground dropping up between... I think most people really liked that. I think it actually added a whole new level at most battle movies, whether it be Kingdom of Heaven or Gladiator or Lord of the Rings, don't really have... Which I really liked to see, because I hate just seeing the regular charge.
Slightly hokey, but exciting.
I agree. Slightly hokey. It is very exciting, too, though. I did think the shot where it kind of starts on the horses and it zooms down inside where the ground's falling apart was a cool idea for a shot, but I thought the visual effects were kind of...
The hokiest part was when Caspian comes back out, that little door drops through the ground and he goes out. That was the hokiest part of all, but anyway.
Well, actually, for me, it was the part of, wait, they're kind of bringing this down on themselves. That was the part where I was kind of, how come none of them are getting squished?
Yeah, that's thinking, because it was people at the start of the charge underground that were knocking the foundations out, if you like, and there was hordes of people behind them, so how are they going to get out if the people in front of them are just knocking the ground away?
This is a great scene to see me, because, I saw that set where they're underground, and it was... I couldn't really tell what it was, because there was so much blue screen, and actually those pillars were only half done. It was bizarre. Like, one side was real nice and looked like the real thing, and the other side was completely flat, to save money, I guess. And there was a lot of blue screen in random places, and I really couldn't tell at all what it was going to look like, and so it was really cool to finally see what they were going for in the movie.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I did like how you spelled brace yourself in the...
Brace yourself.
I think you had 4 R's, 3 A's, 3 C's, an E, and you have about 3 S's and then 4 F's all together at the end.
I would have loved... I hope on the DVD we get to see Anna Popplewell do ADR for that one. Because they must have shot that at really high speed. And then just
so the real thing is
probably 200 frames a second. But
when I get the DVD, I'm gonna rip that and I'm gonna speed it up and slow it down and make it normal.
I have to say, I'm gonna. I pointed out that, for instance, with the change to Peter's character, okay, if they had just cut out or changed that little bit with him and Trumpkin towards the beginning of the movie. It would really drastically change how his character comes across in the film, in my opinion. Without that, that explains the thing. You're mistaken. If they cut that out, it would change a lot. For me, the Susan as a warrior never got annoying, really. It was kind of bordering up there, but I could take it until that one shot centering on her pulling up from the battle where she kills around 10 men in one shot, just turning around, hitting one with a bow, pew, pew. Sorry, I hit the microphone.
How she managed to stay alive is...
Where they crossed the line with Susan was in the scene in that last episode we talked about where she takes out, like, five guys to save Lucy. Because it was all slow motion, superhero, dramatic stuff. I mean, at least that shot took, like, 5 seconds, you know, but... Yeah, I see what you're saying, certainly.
I thought, this is Xena, and I hated Xena. I never watched that show.
But, I mean, it's one of those things where, like...
it all the time.
I can understand to some degree what the filmmakers say, well, she's standing right there. She's not just going to run away. She's going to fight. She's going to get off there, and she's going to fight. I can understand that. But the scene before this, where she's in the woods, like, they completely went out of their way to do that scene. It was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, it's like, she's standing right there. She probably would fight. Because she's not even there in the book. She's not even at the battle.
Mm-hmm. I did always find
I wasn't as bothered by that.
I personally wish that they completely kept out the trebuchets from this movie. I thought they served no purpose. And plus, the Telmarines, it was sort of a, well, we don't know what kind of fortress they're going to have. Let's just take some trebuchets, you know? Which,
I wouldn't say they had no purpose. At the very end, you know, they smashed the entrance to Aslan Tau. Which
but did they know
them.
About
Aslan Tau?
I guess they knew about
Aslan Tau. But as far as the rocks go, I think it's hilarious how they're always, you know, missing.
That's true.
And then as soon as they want to cut off their escape, they suddenly hit. You know?
They just disappear once they hit the ground.
They hit a couple of griffins, don't they?
Yeah, but they disappear once they hit the ground. You don't ever see them on the ground just lying there.
That's true.
It's kind of like, you know, when Edmund's at Caraparo, the catapults. Nani was attacked. Really? They disappear. Telmarine catapult bombs disappear when they hit the ground.
Well, probably they probably hit the ground with such force that they got embedded, which is why you're not seeing great big marbles sitting around.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say here, as much as I turn out to be one of the defendants of Harry Gregson-Williams' score on this film, I did think, and I didn't really think the music was as overused as people say, although the one scene here where they all charge in slow motion, it was just too much. That part, it was just... It sounded exactly like the first film, and I did not like that at all. So that was the only part in the score I really just did not like. In fact, if you watch the... I forget which one it was a featurette, either World of Narnia or Creatures of Narnia, where they have that shot, and they have a different set of music, you know, for the featurette there, and it's much more powerful in the featurette than it comes across in the movie. So that's my rant, my spiel.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about it, you know, in the movie they kind of imply that, you know, Caspian is, you know, counting to decide, you know, when he should start smashing the pillars. But really, why couldn't they have just, like, marked out a spot? Like, right here, here's where you start hitting the pillar. Like, I guess they just wanted to show, you know, teamwork, they're finally coming together.
No. I think it was because they had to wait on, depending on when the battle started.
Yeah,
you know,
because it was
charging.
How fast the Telmarines were advancing.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is the actual spot where they start knocking out the pillars. Like, why not just like draw a line on the ground in the tunnel rather than say, okay, after I've ridden for 10 seconds, I can start knocking them out because then I'm not gonna. Because the whole idea is they don't want to knock out the pillars under the Narnians.
No. The point is that they start counting when the Telmarines start charging.
Yeah.
And so depending on it's depending on where the Telmarines are
yeah.
not where the Narnians are.
Yep. They want to wait until the Telmarines are right above them before they start knocking the ground out.
How does Caspian know when the Telmarines are above them?
Well, kind of
does he not see how fast they're moving before he goes?
I thought I could see them starting to charge.
Whatever. It was dramatic. It was cool. Moving on.
Yeah.
Who cares if it's hokey?
Hokey. You want hokey? I think that by this point, the "You're a mouse, you have no imagination" line was old.
Missy, it was huge times. It ceases to be funny.
And but the point with the soldier, "You're a mouse. You people have no imagination."
Oh, yeah.
I didn't like it here.
The "You're a mouse" line was old, but I did like that. Just seemed something that I think C.S. Lewis might have liked. I don't know what he would have thought of re-stabbing the guy in the head, but I did like the
no. He stabbed him in the eye.
That's what the Telmarines are. The people, they have no imagination. They're completely, you know, they don't believe in any of the old stories. And so I think that kind of summed up what the Telmarines were to C.S. Lewis in a sense.
So it's like that. You go to YouTube, you look at Prince Caspian in 5 seconds. You people have no imagination. Cut.
I would have preferred something a little more original.
Okay, maybe you can answer this for me. This was something I've been wondering. What happens to Caspian's horse that he's riding? Do we see him get knocked off?
I don't remember.
Oh.
Because I'm wondering. And Edmund, too. He loses his horse, and I'm wondering why, because being on a horse gives you kind of an advantage, and I wouldn't just jump off.
Oh, but it's not cool to be on a horse. It's cool to be...
You gotta have hand-to-hand fighting.
Right.
No, the Lord of the Rings had the best charge ever. What, the Ealingas? That was cool.
Right.
They were horses.
Oh, man.
Well...
Well, overall, I do think I like the first battle of Bruna better than this one.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought it was paced better. You know, it was shorter, which I liked, and it had more. This, aside from the, you know, them falling through the pits, it was kind of the same thing. You know, they're just fighting, and now they're still fighting. You know, and whereas the Battle of Bruna had very distinct stages to it. And it all made sense. Like, you could see what Peter's plan was quite clearly. And I guess you could in this one as well. It just seemed to drag on a little longer. Although I was definitely much more pleased with the climax here of the trees coming in. I was much more pleased with that than I was with the Narnian army arriving in the first movie.
Okay, so let's talk about... Do we have time to talk about the Return of the Lion? And then we'll just stop and finish up the ending on the last episode.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, because we just got 2 pages. It was... Well, I guess we cut to Lucy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we have the same way twice, the same way twice.
Things have happened the same way
which
twice.
Which we already talked about.
But, yeah, it's. I don't really understand why the Telmarines were pursuing Lucy.
Okay.
It's because...
You don't?
Why were the Telmarines pursuing Lucy?
I think it's quite obvious. Okay, so look at this way. You're in a battle, or your army is about to be in a battle. There's your enemy. They're somewhat surrounded.
But they go out the back. It seems unlikely the submarines would see them. And
I believe they had the whole place surrounded, I think.
I suppose,
with sentries or whatever, so they could see what they were doing. If you see one or two people ride off somewhere... Even if it's children, you don't let them through because you have no idea where they're going. They could have other troops waiting somewhere else that they're going to go get. For all you know, Lucy could have been going to Arkhamland or something to go rally support. You don't know where she's going, what she's doing, and you're not taking the risk of letting her through. And the Telmarine, he wasn't, you know, he was there. But he was trying to capture her. He wasn't trying to kill her.
The point
is, he's not like completely heartless. He's just trying to capture her.
You're right.
Okay. I did think. I remember everyone kind of in my theater went a little bit when Aslan jumped on the guy, and then you see him running away.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost got the idea is like they couldn't like they decided to have him kill him, and then they thought no, we can't have Aslan just.
The MPAA said, hey, that guy doesn't die, does he? Because they wanted the PC, I don't know. But I think the whole purpose behind, you know, changing Aslan's entrance here and having him, you know, save Lucy, I think, is the idea of Lucy actually going out to find Aslan and then finding him and then bringing him back to save the Narnians. It seems out of character to Aslan that he's not a tame lion. And so I think they wanted it to be more like, you know, he, out of his own free will, he chose to save Lucy. So, and also, it gives him a chance to, because I felt like Aslan was too safe and tame in the first one. And this gave, you know, a chance to have actually involved in an action scene here and actually see him, you know, take a guy out, actually jump like 100 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cool. It was a cool shot. And so, yeah, I thought that, well, even though it's not in the book, was more in character for Aslan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I thought I wish they kind of still hadn't changed. Like, the dialogue is very similar to the book, but I wish they hadn't changed the "now you're a lioness" line.
Yeah, honestly, I wonder if they just thought that line would be too weird.
Which line?
I think that, Liam Neeson.
Huh?
It's on page 48 of the fan script. I think that Liam Neeson would be capable of delivering that line without it sounding odd or weird.
Perhaps.
I think he could. I think he could have done it.
Speaking of Liam Neeson, I think I love the voice so much better in this one than Wardrobe. I thought it was fine in Wardrobe, but I think they did something in post to give it more of a growl. It's a subtle growl at the end. And I thought, I love the voice so much more in this one than in Wardrobe.
Maybe it's just because Liam Neeson's older.
Could be.
I don't know. But
he starts to growl as he gets older.
Yeah. I think I was kind of afraid that they would do the roar and then have the camera pan over the trees, just like in the Two Towers, where Treebeard roars and, you know, pans over the trees. But
this was, of course, certainly one of the most anticipated scenes. Although
it has the best music in the entire film.
Yeah, I agree. It's great music.
Amazing music.
And people seem kind of mixed on what they thought of the visual effects when Lucy and Aslan kind of roll over. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah,
it
was.
Like, Aslan did look kind of fake, like when they're falling over, but as far as the interaction, I totally bought it.
Yeah, and it's so much better than the other one. I love to see the actual interaction, you know?
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
I can't wait to see on the DVD how they did that.
Yeah.
She nudges him and the puppet tips over.
Yeah. Now, I will say that, after that, once Aslan starts talking, it's like, I thought it was horrible. I thought it was much worse than anything in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
I don't know. I didn't think that.
Or the CG Aslan looked horribly fake to me. Whereas Wardrobe, it wasn't great, but I bought it. You know, I believed in Aslan in the first one.
So you actually thought the CG of Aslan in the new one was worse?
What's that?
They did
switch. You actually thought the CG of the new one was worse?
Yeah, they did switch companies, so I don't know. I've only seen it 3 times, so I haven't really had a chance to really analyze it.
It looks
okay to me. It works. So I'm super picky.
In theaters, I gasped when they showed Aslan because I couldn't. I was just expecting him. Yeah, exactly. Like, I was expecting him to be, he was really good in the first one. I thought this one he would finally be awesome. Or at the very least, he'd just kind of be one up. And yeah, I thought he was far worse. And although a lot of people have said, like, some of his expressions they liked a lot more, and I agree with that one, that the actual animation was very well done, but he didn't look as real to me as he did in Wardrobe.
Well, keep in mind, Glumpuddle, keep in mind, you're right now, at this point, you are comparing your theater viewing of Prince Caspian to your Blu-ray viewing of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, I don't think so necessarily, because I saw Wardrobe, 7 times in theaters, and each time I thought Aslan looked pretty good. And this one, it was just like, And although you may have a point there, but I still think that...
I think we're less satisfied as we get more and more picky about better
special effects. Yeah, exactly.
I still watch... I think I can watch Wardrobe even on my DVD. And Aslan looks great. Yeah, his fur is totally believable. And he looks weighty. And I believe he's there. And in this one... Like, it was just like the headshots, like when he's just sitting there talking, that I didn't buy it.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Gents, I want your thoughts on this scene. You have been our silent person here.
I really liked the scene. I loved Georgie's performance as Lucy. I thought that was brilliant. I didn't notice anything wrong with Aslan at all. I just totally bought that. So I disagree with Glumpuddle on that one.
Can we all agree that the cinematography in the scene was fantastic?
Yes.
I love that there's a shot in it where she's she's putting her hands through his mane, isn't there? And I just thought that was amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought that was really realistic.
Yeah, I thought the interaction between them was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love seeing, you know, the deep connection that they two have, you know. Because when you boil it down, it really is, you know, about Lucy and Aslan. They're so much a part of the whole stories, you know, with the ones that she's in anyway, you know, because, you know, that Lucy has a very special place in his heart. And I love the way that it was portrayed in this scene, you know, just to see them together and, you know, just it really worked. I really liked it.
Yeah.
I think overall,
I think for a lot of Narnia fans, this was the most anticipated scene when Lucy meets Aslan.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get used to the idea of the fact that they split up into two scenes.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird.
I would have preferred if they kept them together, but, you know, I see how that might not have worked pacing-wise.
I think it worked very, very well the way they did it. It's my favorite scene in the book, but which one is actually the scene? It's a little bit confusing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? You know what? When we get the DVD, I'll rip it and I'll put the two together so it's like one thing.
Yes, if you like mix them together, that'll be awesome.
I think there's some scenes where I can definitely, like the Aslan roaring on the bridge, I can definitely say, yes, I can see how Georgie is being forced to act with a ping pong ball or a big head. But here at this scene, I'm thinking, how is she acting with that ridiculous looking head or a ping pong ball or whatever they had there?
For this scene, I believe it was Shane Rangi who actually stood in for Aslan.
Yeah, I heard that.
I'm just thinking, I saw Shane Rangi, a photo of him on set, and I'm thinking, you know, for me to be, oh, Aslan, so good to see you. You know?
Well, no, Shane's a big guy. He's a pretty intimidating guy, so.
Not with that head on. It's like, oh, it's the BBC Aslan. Welcome back, BBC Aslan. Hello.
Well, I was happy with, I'm still confused. I'm not sure if I should say this scene or these scenes, but I was emotionally happy with how they pulled off Lucy and Aslan meeting.
Good.
It's not quite as magical as it is in the book, but it's still a nice scene.
And I guess that was pretty much. And then, of course, the trees come, and I thought
they finally got Aslan's roar right. I thought when he roars to wake up the trees, it wasn't just a loud burp. It was actually a roar.
I did. Now, in my theater, a lot of people laughed when Lucy pulls out the knife. And even I kind of thought, all right, I know how this goes. And she doesn't use it. So what's she doing?
Right.
She's trying to say ha ha.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Although, yeah.
There's no real purpose to it. But we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, I guess.
Like sweet innocent little Lucy, whang! I got a knife, but I'm not afraid to use it against the whole Telmarine army.
I guess I did think, of course, I did like that in the book. It was, in the movie, it was very clear that Aslan is the one controlling the Water God.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Glumpuddle, your little brother was right about Aslan, about the waves creeping up away from Aslan. Those actually his roar, not the water god.
That was pretty sweet. I thought that was so cool.
I think the water god. It'd be interesting. I wish I could kind of do a poll with you know, people who had not read the book and say, what did you think of the water creature at the end?
I've asked a couple people, and all of them were like when they were telling me about the movie, they didn't bring it up. But when I said, well, what do you think of that water guy? They were like, yeah, what was up with that? I was kind of confused.
I don't know.
Yeah, they could have fixed it with a line at the beginning, but oh well.
But backtracking a little bit, I just want to say that the moment where the trees come in, I thought was, I think it had more potential than, you know, if they had like set up the river god and like the whole, it would have made the whole ending about, you know, all these things that we were talking about at the beginning of the movie is being either extinct or mythical or whatever. Now they're all coming back to save the day. I think setting up the river god would have added to that. But obviously here, all the setup about the trees of, you know, Lucy having her dream where they're moving and then waking up to find that they're gone and Trumpkin saying, oh yeah, the trees, they're gone. It pays off so well, I think, here when the trees come in to save the day.
Yeah.
I think that's so in the theme of Prince Caspian, of the old days returning.
So what did you guys think of the way that they actually did the trees? I was really happy that it didn't turn out like Ents-like, because that was one thing I was really afraid of. It was just, they were going to look so much like Ents.
And they had them wading through the
people
soil.
People were going to be like, oh, they copied that. But they made it so different, you know, their fighting style, totally different.
In the book, you know, The Lord of the Rings, the Ents are definitely creatures just walking on top of the earth. And in the book, so the Narnian Chronicles, it says they are wading through the earth, which they do. Yeah. Although I did have to say, wow, those are some incredibly long roots.
Although, you know, I think it's interesting, if you look at the scene, if you look at Lucy's dream when the trees are moving, I'm pretty sure that for the most part you can't see them wading because there's like a bush covering it up.
Yeah, I thought, oh, that's called strategic placing.
Yeah, and then here, like, there's one or two shots where you can actually see the trees wading, but I think they did kind of want to avoid it.
Octopus-like.
Right. I actually, my only regret with the trees is I think they should have been, they needed about 30 more seconds of them, like, fighting and messing up the trebuchets. So they needed just a little bit more there, because they were working so well.
Did y'all notice the face in the tree?
Yeah, I like
that. Not
the face,
really, a little bit.
The face?
I could see the face.
I don't think I did.
Oh, when the tree gets hit by trebuchet, a face emerges out of the tree and it roars.
It's like a pattern in the leaves when the leaves are...
I've seen it, but it doesn't really look like a face.
It's faint, but you have to be kind of aware of it. The second time, I could see it.
Well, it's exactly... Well, like you hear a roaring sound. And
you hear the sound, and then
the
you can kind of see the face.
That roaring sound comes through.
You see the mouth, and you can kind of see where the eyes would be.
I also think here that you got to say that Peter cries for Aslan, whereas at the night raid he says for Narnia, but strangely strangely forgets
it
to say for Aslan. Yeah, and then it's
his changes. You know how his priorities have shifted. You know, no longer it's about Narnia and him; it's about Aslan. So
I didn't like though that in this battle there were. It's like, I felt like there were two battle charges. You know, there's the. I felt like there's, you know, the. I felt like there's two. I almost felt it was like deja vu where Peter, you know, takes him into battle. It just seemed a little odd to me.
I would have been happier if Peter had done his for Aslan bit at the first charge, you know, when the How gets blocked off. I would have liked to hear Peter say for Aslan at that charge because it shows that he's got faith.
Yeah,
whereas
I agree.
The way that it does work out, it's not until he sees the trees coming and he knows that Aslan has been found.
Right.
Then he says,
that's a good point.
I was a bit disappointed in that, but I'm glad that he said it at some point, in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess after that, we have... I guess for the next episode, we have Aslan makes a door in the air.
Oh, I can't. Let me just finish up with the river guide here. I thought that the design of the river guide, I really wish he'd been a little more... I guess because I'm a Spider-Man fan, I was thinking of Hydro-Man, but too much. It's all I could think of. But I wish there had been a little more Pauline Baynes-ish, where there was kind of grass and muddy kind of mixed in there. It wasn't just a water shape, although I did think it was pretty cool.
I thought it was a very interesting effect. Not what I would have done, but it's interesting. I have to say that scene, you're seeing it from way up. From his perspective, it's another shot where you're looking down, and you can see the water and it's rippling. Mm-hmm. It always bugs me because I'm like, the water, you know, it's like the water's being drawn towards him and up, but you never see the water from the shore. And I just see this like,
did he swallow Sepespian? Is that the idea?
Not necessarily. I mean, he did kind of go into his mouth, sort of, but I think he just kind of washed him away.
I did think, wow, that horse is amazingly calm.
Yeah.
I don't know of any of our horses that would, you know, just kind of sit there.
I'd like to see how they did that on the documentary.
Yeah, it's kind of convenient. I mean, I think if you're a PG fantasy battle film looking for a way to kill off the bad guys, water is a nice, safe way to do it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of get washed. They just kind of get washed away.
Just kind of smashes him into his head.
Right.
Splash is like, oh, my morning wash. You know, splash water into your face.
And he was never heard from again.
Right.
I have to say, I was surprised that Glazal survived. We never talked about how... I thought he died for sure when he got smashed into the...
Oh, yeah, the
tree
grabs
you know?
Him. And he hesitates when he's about to kill Caspian. That
shows that his heart is
Yeah, I actually thought it was kind of bad for him, because it looks like he's not going to kill Caspian. Then the tree root, like, comes out of nowhere. I felt like, oh, man, and he was about to do something good, and then the tree gets him.
Those darn Narnian trees.
But so should we go ahead and do the...
No.
Save that for a different time. We're going to need the whole hour to talk about the end.
You're not going to want to do the kiss in 10 minutes. Come on.
Well, we could just talk about just the scene where they're... Because I think it's that. Oh, we'll get to the next scene in Droopy Cheep's tail. We want to talk about
that. Yeah, we'll talk about that next time. We can talk about that next time.
Okay.
Can we save that?
This is about a half hour episode right here.
Okay,
so.
Let's go ahead and stop then.
All right. Well, hey, thanks everyone. This was great.
That was good stuff.
Thank you.
No problem.
Powerful, wholesome goodness.
Right. So, has everybody here, while we're on the subject, has everyone here seen the Watchmen trailer?
Oh, come on. We're not on the subject.
We are now.
I've seen it, but I've not heard it.
Okay, Glumpuddle. Glumpuddle, you can keep your naked blue electric men. I just want Terminator Salvation, okay?
Naked blue electric men.
Well, that's all for now. Feel free to email me for questions or comments if you want. Rillian@narniweb.com. And of course, there's always the comments on the iTunes store where you can post a review and give us a star rating. And of course, there's the comments on the narniweb.com website. So take your pick. There are many choices available. Anyway, this is Rillian signing off, and join us next time for our hopefully final analysis of Prince Caspian.